From Troy Public Radio, this is In Focus Weekend, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. As we think about Memorial Day, we remember the Gold Star families of military members who have died in the line of duty. Today, we'll talk by Skype with James Edward Brown of Troy. His beloved son, John Eli Brown, died while serving as a member of the U.S. Army's 101st Airborne Division during Operation Iraqi Freedom. Mr. Brown, thank you so much for joining us by Skype from Troy.
Thank you for inviting me.
Mr. Brown, you and your wife are members of the Gold Star families. What are the Gold Star families?
We are a group of families that has lost a loved one during the wartime that has served in the military.
There is a monument to your son, John Eli Brown, in the Troy Bicentennial Park. Can you describe that monument?
It is certainly black and gray monument. It's the battlefield insignia representing the soldiers that died on the battlefield with the bayonet upside down with the helmet and the dog tags. That is a replica of the monument that they dedicated in Troy for him.
He was a member of the 101st Airborne, the Band of Brothers. Tell us more about your son.
Well, Johnny, when he first went into service, he went into the National Guard. He was 17 years old. He took his basic at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and then he left from there and spent nearly a year at Fort Gordon, Georgia. Whenever he got out and got back home, he wanted to go full-time military. I knew some people from my prior service of being in the National Guard. I got in contact with them, and they helped make the transfer from the National Guard over to regular Army. And he was assigned to the 101st up at Fort Campbell.
And then he was sent overseas. What happened then?
Well, just as the Gulf War was really getting heated up, they started building up the troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. The 101st, they left, I think it was in February of 2003. So we spent the week with him up there before they left. They arrived in Kutch, I think it was in the 1st of March. So whenever they started their movement to Baghdad, they was just south of Baghdad. April the 14th was the day that John was killed, and he'd only been in Kutch for about 6 weeks.
He was a driver, wasn't he?
Yeah.
For the vehicle that got blown up.
Yeah, he was the captain's driver. It was him and another soldier that was killed. The captain and the lieutenant was injured.
I noticed, Mr. Brown, that reporter Julian Barnes wrote about your son, John Eli, and the article was called Losing PFC Brown. It was in an article published by U.S. News and World Report, April 21st, 2003. Did that reporter know your son?
A lot of the units had reporters that was embedded with them. And Julian was embedded with John and them's unit. And as they were moving through Iraq, Julian was kind of busy around the different units. But his primary station was with John and them at the 244 Air Defense Artillery unit. He stayed with them. He ate with them. He slept with them. He rode in the vehicle with them. So there was a few weeks there that he was right there with them. So we communicated through Julian, through his Facebook and phone, and my wife and Julian, they done a lot of emailing back and forth. He kept us informed of what was going on. And the day that John had got killed, Julian had just the day before left their unit and went to another unit, but he was still close by. But he had done an article on John. And then after John got killed, he had to go and he had to change the title to Losing PFC Brown. We were very fortunate that Julian was able to come down because we got to sit down face to face. And he was able to tell us things that, you know, that they were doing and things that he participated in. It was a relief to us to know that somebody over there knew him.
He talked in the article about what a wonderful personality your son had. He put everyone at ease. Everyone loved to be around him. I want to talk briefly about the patriotic service in your family. Take us back to World War II, for instance.
My dad, he served in World War II, and I'm the oldest of four siblings, and I served 24 years in the National Guard. I also served in Desert Storm back in 1991. Then John, he followed suit, going in full-time military.
The Gold Star families in the Wiregrass, you actually have contacted families that lost loved ones fighting for our country.
We visited families from Enterprise, Elba, Wicksburg, Montgomery, Eufaula. We would just meet with the families and just let them know what to expect and let them know that we were there for them if they needed anything.
So the Gold Star family concept dates back to World War I when military families displayed the service flags. They first featured a blue star for every family member serving in the armed forces, the star's color changing to gold if the family lost a loved one in the war. And I am so sorry for your loss. He was an inspiration to all who knew him, and his service reminds us that freedom is not free.
That's right. And we keep his memory going by talking about him. It's not like it was right after John got killed. We would meet people, and you could look and you could tell that they wanted to say something, but they didn't know what to say. So we would bring it up. And it'd make them feel at ease. And then, you know, then we would carry on the conversation and, you know, we could talk about him. Another thing that there's a lot of people that don't even really know the true meaning of Memorial Day. To them, it's just a holiday where they can go barbecue and they got a day off from work or whatever. They don't know the true meaning.
Let's remind people who are traveling Highway 231. And if they're going through Troy or if they live near Troy, to go to Bicentennial Park and see the monument that honors your son.
Yes, and if they are on the road at 11 o'clock that Monday morning, weather permitting, there will be a Memorial Day ceremony there.
Speaking of people traveling, tell me about the Gold Star on the license plates.
Gold Star families in Alabama and other states also, our legislature, governor, all have passed a Gold Star tag that if you are a Gold Star member, the tag is given to you free. It's a permanent tag, very distinctive. Each state has different kind of tags, but Alabama's got the battlefield insignia on it with a Gold Star. It just says Gold Star family on it. If you see that tag, that is an indication that who that vehicle belongs to lost a family member during wartime. There's a Gold Star on the tag, and then there's got an insignia of the battlefield monument, and then you've got your numbers and letters on it. Very unique tag, and you'll know what it is.
Mr. Brown, I want to thank you so much for visiting with us today by Skype on Troy Public Radio.
Thank you.
Joining us by Skype from Troy was James Edward Brown. His beloved son, John Eli Brown, died while serving as a member of the U.S. Army's 101st Airborne Division during Operation Iraqi Freedom. On Memorial Day, we remember the Gold Star families and their loved ones who died while serving our country in the cause of freedom. Coming up, we'll delve into the history of the tastiest of all summer traditions, American barbecue. That's ahead on In Focus Weekend, so stay with us. From Troy Public Radio, this is In Focus Weekend, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison. Barbecue is America in a mouthful, according to veteran journalist Jim Ockmoody, who comes from a long line of Georgia pitmasters. Jim Ockmoody served the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for almost three decades as a reporter and editor, winning the Writer of the Year award from the Cox newspaper chain. He's also been honored by the James Beard Foundation. The book, Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in America, is Jim's tribute to a favorite food. He joins us by Skype from Atlanta. Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jim, we're going to talk today about your landmark book, Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in America. I understand that you are descended from a long line of pitmasters.
Oh, yeah. My grandfather and my great-grandfather were pitmasters in Bartow County in northwest Georgia, up around Cartersville, northwest of Atlanta. And they used to cook barbecues for community gatherings going back into the 1800s. You know, my great-grandfather, for whom I'm named, it's where the James comes from. We don't have a picture of him, but we have his Brunswick stew recipe, which in some respects my father and I always thought was better.
Well, here we are in July. A lot of people consider this barbecue month because Southerners are so serious about barbecue and football. But let's set the stage for your book and talk about how far barbecue dates back in America.
Well, barbecue is pretty much it's a worldwide thing. People have been cooking, grilling meats and smoking meats since cavemen. And they've been doing it in just about every culture you can think of around the world. But the New World tradition of barbecue is very specific, and you can really date it to the origin of that word. The word originates from the second voyage of Columbus, when the Spanish sailors went ashore on Cuba and saw the Indians, the Taino Indians, they're cooking something, and their translation of what it was they were doing from the Taino language, they translated it as barbacoa, which became anglicized as barbecue. And it just took on a real tradition here that's much more pronounced than it took on anywhere else. One of my central contentions in the book is that barbecue is the most American food. And, you know, we always hear that phrase, something is as American as apple pie. And I think that's kind of silly because apple pie is actually British. Barbecue would be a much better choice for that phrase. And one of the ways you can sort of look at this is in America, barbecue goes back so far. When they laid the cornerstone of the U.S. Capitol building in 1793, George Washington was already president, and after they had the Masonic ceremony for laying the cornerstone, they went and had a barbecue. It was already so much of an American tradition that going and having a barbecue just sort of felt like what you did to celebrate the founding of the Republic.
Do you want to share a quick passage from your book so the listeners can get an idea of your writing style?
Sure. This is a paragraph from the introduction where I sort of frame why I think barbecue is so American and why it matters. Barbecue is the English version of a Spanish word describing an Indian cooking technique that took root in the South, where it was prized by planters and usually prepared by African Americans and eventually spread throughout the United States. The story of barbecue touches almost every aspect of our history. It involves the age of discovery, the colonial era, slavery, the Civil War, the settling of the West, the coming of immigrants, the great migration of blacks and whites from the South, the rise of the automobile, the expansion of suburbia, the rejiggering of gender roles. It encompasses every region and demographic group. It is entwined with our politics and tangled up with our race relations. Barbecue is America in a mouthful.
On page 51, there's a vignette, a couple of paragraphs, that date back to points in history. You were talking about the history of barbecue. Can you share what happened on those days that involved U.S. presidents, FDR at Warm Springs and LBJ?
The history of barbecue is so entwined with American politics. So many presidents have either come from a barbecue tradition, or if they didn't come from a barbecue tradition, particularly if they were back in the 1800s, they went to political barbecues to raise money. That, if you go back and look at the newspapers of the 1800s, the vast majority of mentions of the word barbecue have to do with political gatherings. And in that tradition, there were two in the 20th century that really I thought were particularly poignant. One of them was when Franklin Roosevelt was president and spending a lot of his time in Warm Springs, where they had the hot waters treating his polio. He was down there in 1945, in April of 1945, and they were getting ready to hold a big community barbecue, which he had certainly been to them there before. And he, sitting there at the little White House, he sent word that he would be at the barbecue, that he wanted to have a certain cocktail. I think he wanted an old-fashioned, and that he was going to have Brunswick stew this day, not any barbecue pork, just Brunswick stew. He really liked that. And he didn't make it to that barbecue because a few minutes later he died of a cerebral hemorrhage.
Wow.
The other one you're mentioning that is a barbecue that never happened, it was in 1963. I think you know where this is headed, in Texas. Lyndon Johnson used to throw huge barbecues at his ranch outside of Austin. And when President John F. Kennedy was visiting in November 1963 and made his speech in Dallas and then was in the motorcade where he was, was assassinated, they were at that very moment, they were preparing a huge barbecue at the LBJ Ranch. That's where he was headed. He was going to get on a plane to fly down to the LBJ Ranch and spend the night with the Johnsons, see the ranch, see a little bit of Central Texas. They were going to have a big barbecue for him the next day. And they were making all the preparations down there when they got the phone call that he had been shot. And they obviously didn't have that barbecue.
Tragic dates in American history. Jim, there is so much to your book. Here we have Labor Day coming up and more barbecue traditions. Can we get back together and talk about your book, Smoke Lore and Barbecue, close to Labor Day?
Sure. I love to talk about barbecue. This is one of my favorite subjects.
I noticed that another author called this Barbicultural Studies.
Yeah, that's John Shelton Reed, who was a professor at the University of North Carolina for years, and he wrote a really good book about the history of North Carolina barbecue called Holy Smoke. And John's a pal of mine and very clever, and we sometimes can't remember who coined which cute phrase because we both coined a bunch of them, but I think that was John.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us today by Skype from Atlanta in celebration of your book, Smoke Lore, A Short History of Barbecue in America.
Thank you, Carolyn. I enjoyed it.
Thanks for joining us for the show. We invite you to tune in and hear In Focus over the noon hour most weekdays. And we're always ready for you on demand as a podcast. This is In Focus Weekend, and I'm Carolyn Hutchison, wishing you a meaningful Memorial Day weekend from Troy Public Radio.